Big D Entertainment presents the Dave Holly Hour. Brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions. He's a variety entertainer, a former broadcaster and columnist, a true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
Well, happy weekend, Eve, and I hope you're having a happy holiday season as well. Great to have you along. Guess what? The Dave Holly Hour podcast has graduated to double digits. That's right. This is episode 10, so guess what I'm going to do to celebrate? You regular listeners know, it's time for some Jasper Newton, better known as Jack Daniel. Ah, yes, it's the way I am on the nights that I actually put the show together after recording the interviews earlier in the week when I had the opportunity. And I tell you what, it's been a great time these first 10 episodes, and it's a wonderful life for me. And speaking of it's a wonderful life, took that in last Sunday at the Icon. Goodnight Theater Collective did it again. Bravo. I mean, my goodness gracious. Every time that we go to a Goodnight Theater Collective show, it's like, how are they going to top it? And then they do. It was really cool because what it was the radio play of the classic that we know with Jimmy Stewart, playing George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. But it was done as though you were sitting in the audience watching a network broadcast or a radio broadcast of the play. So these people that were in the cast have to play different characters. They dressed as though they were in the 1940s. A lot of fun things that they did with that. And anytime you get the opportunity to go see the Goodnight Theater Collective, do so. It is wonderful. We tied that back in, I know. Last weekend, participated in the Ugly Christmas Sweater Karaoke at Sky Lounge and Tea, and it was a fun time, and our friend Elijah, who just celebrated a birthday, by the way, happy birthday, Pinto, and it was so fun because he was one of the winners and got some fun stuff, so congratulations on that. Also, last weekend, before going to the Ugly Christmas Sweater Karaoke at the Sky, we had to stop by a diaper keg. Have you ever been to one before? It was a party. Friends of ours are expecting in February, and the price of admission was diapers, and then you got to drink beer. Of course, the woman that is pregnant didn't partake because she's pregnant and she's a good mom to be. She's going to make a great mother, too. Well, anyway, we had been pretty busy all day long and all weekend long, obviously, with so many things going on, that my wife decided not to go buy diapers. But she says, can we just give them cash? In the meantime, my wife gets this week's honorable mention. Honorable mention, Carrie Spittler, for the fun little bit that you wrote in a card, because it tickled my funny bone. And if I ever do some stand-up, I'm stealing it. Now, right now, she didn't give it back to me verbatim, so I am paraphrasing here. So in the card, she wrote something along the lines that, at my age, if I walk in and ask for the diaper section, they immediately direct me to the Depends aisle. Ba-dum-tsh, rim shot for you, my dear, and an honorable mention. And for those maybe listening for the first time, honorable mention does not mean you came in fourth. No, it means you came in first this week for tickling my funny bone, making me think about something. We have a new person every week that comes up on that. We also have new guests every week, and this week, to celebrate episode number 10, we got a couple of dandies. Zach Dresch, local comedian, also was one of those who was involved in It's a Wonderful Life. does stand-up, he does improv, he's also in a couple of bands. He's pretty active in the entertainment world, that's for sure. A funny, funny guy. That's coming up later. But up next, I sat down with an old friend and took a stroll down Radio Memory Lane. We call that a teaser. It's coming up next on the Dave Holly Hour podcast. Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, it's okay to treat yourself too. Quality Nails. Call for an appointment. 605-334-1463.
He's never met a meal he didn't like. Once again, here's Dave Holly.
Welcome back and welcome to Weekend Eve. It is a fun time around the Sioux Empire. So many things going on in terms of our arts and entertainment community, but also, you know, many Christmas things taking place and holiday things. So make sure you get out there and enjoy them all. And a guy that I have enjoyed so many times with is joining us right now, Chad Hoewieler. And you may say, who's Chad Hoewieler? Well, he's a great guy that a huge portion of the Sioux Empire knew for many, many years is Chad McKenzie. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've been, you know, when I started this thing and I started putting up my A-list of people I had on there, it's like, Chad's got to be on at some point.
You know, one of my favorite memories when we worked together, we'd go into the studio and listen to Christmas songs.
Exactly what I wanted to start with. Yes, it was usually the day before Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
If it was on the a weekday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would.
And we'd go in and we'd just start going through the music library and listening to Christmas songs together.
You bet.
Some of my best memories.
Oh, mine too. Because we did that every year. That was so fun. And if I'm not mistaken, Kenny Loggins.
Yeah, Celebrate Me Home. Another one was Four Tops this Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what yours were.
Well, I'm a big Mannheim Steamroller.
Okay.
And also Trans-Siberian Orchestra. But there's one that means a lot to me, and that is Rosemary Clooney, Christmas Waltz.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Love to dance with Mrs. Claus to that one.
Fun stuff.
That it was. Fun memories. We had a lot of memories, and you obviously had a ton of memories in this town, you know, because you started off early. You know, some of us had to work in small communities when we started in radio. You did work in Volga. Yeah, that's right.
And there isn't even a station there anymore. Now they moved to Brookings.
Yeah.
Ended up in Sioux Falls, and 35 years, had a good run.
Amazing. But you had a run with a lot of different people in that time frame.
And I don't know, was it me? Did I chase him away? Or first it was Harley.
Right.
And then it was Mike Hendrickson.
Yeah.
And then from there it was Dan Christofferson. And then it was Jack Taylor.
Right.
Am I missing anyone? Gene Hetland, of course, the most recent.
Right.
At KSOO.
Let's see. Randy Schrader.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Randy
for Holly Hunter.
That's right. Thank
man,
you.
When we were in the talk portion days of our careers and so forth.
Oh, gosh. What happened to the years, Dave?
Oh, they go by too quickly now, don't they?
Oh, they do.
You think of that, you know, and I sit there and so this is, you know, it's perfect that it's a 10. Episode number 10. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a numbers person myself because I know you started on 10-10.
That's right.
And here it is, episode number 10.
Episode number 10 now.
Because my wife gives me such a bad time whenever I turn up the volume on the TV, I have to go in increments of 5. Except if it's...
You haven't changed.
Or 2-2, or 3-3, or 4-4.
Right.
I can live with those. But otherwise, it's got to be a 0 or a 5.
Very true. Oh, my goodness. Too much the same in that regard. Yeah, that's for sure.
We always joke that we were brothers from another mother.
No doubt about that. Yeah. It is so good to see you. And you look great.
Thanks.
Before we go back and talk memories and so forth, tell people what you're doing at this time, though.
I am now working with Dakota Lions Sight and Health and community outreach coordinator and hospital liaison. So I do a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. I'm cover South Dakota, North Dakota, Northern Nebraska, and Southwest Minnesota. And I go out and I give PowerPoint presentations. So I train nurses on what to do
right.
in case somebody passes away and they have checked the box that they want to be a donor. There are things that have to be done in order for that to take place, and talk to driver's ed classes and service organizations. And yeah, I really enjoy it.
Excellent. And you just got back from Fargo.
I did. I just got back today.
Which is Norwegian for long way. Fargo.
You can say that again.
Was it a little chilly there?
15 below this morning when I got up.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah. And that wasn't with the wind chill factor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know at one point today, I thought, oh, wow, that's cool. We're at 7. Wind chill's at 7. Oh, wait a minute. The wind chill has a minus number in front of it. Yeah. Oh, see, that even leads us into another part of your esteemed career that you've had. Weather.
Oh, did the weather for 4 years on TV, too.
No doubt about
it. That was a tough time because, in fact, funny you should bring that up. I was just visiting with my wife about that not that long ago, where you'd have to go and leave for the office to go do the weather about the time everybody else was getting home and having a beer in the driveway with the rest of the neighbors. And that's a tough schedule.
That is. And you were still doing radio at that time.
Yeah, still doing radio in the mornings.
So how many hours were you putting in a day?
Too many. Too many.
If I'm not mistaken, it was a Dave Dedrick that kind of gave you the nod that said, do what you love best.
Bingo. He said, you work to live. You do not live to work.
Right.
And when he said that, it was like somebody took a big 2x4 and smacked me across the head. And there's a lot of truth to that. And I think the older you get, too, the more you realize that he's right.
True.
You know, if we didn't have bills to pay.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Would any of us be working? I mean, really, let's be
honest. Or just be doing the things that we love.
We would just be, like in this case, what you're doing here with this podcast.
Very much so.
We would just be doing the things we find enjoyment from.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Oh, my goodness. So let's go back then. And so Harley, first of all.
Oh, wow.
There was at least for me, I heard him even before you got on the air with him, because growing up in Rock Rapids, and at that time, before the airwaves were filled with a bajillion channels, that was one of the good ones to pick up. Especially if you had a 73 car and were punching the little buttons because you didn't have FM or anything and you're fine tuning.
He was probably working with Warren West at the time.
He was. Yeah. And then Warren got shifted up to the afternoon.
Yeah.
But tell us about Harley. What was he like aside from what we knew on the radio?
You know, I learned everything about radio from him.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I know about radio, I learned from him. And he was peculiar. He was eccentric. But you know what? That's what made him him.
Right.
He really was the same person on the air as he was off the air.
Okay.
Yeah, he really was game for anything. And it really was a pleasure to work with him. It really was.
And do I understand the story correctly that he would, before leaving his house to do the morning show with you, and you were already there.
Yeah.
He would call and want to know, like, the top three things in the news or something?
2:45 every morning.
Really?
Phone would ring. And it was expected that I was going to tell him what was happening in the news that day.
Uh-huh.
And usually he had already known. Yeah, he had already known.
So was this also a little test?
I think
Let's
it was.
Let's see if Chad passes today.
I think it was. Yeah, I do. I think it was. Yeah, every morning, 2:45, that phone would go off.
You know, one of the bits that you guys did that I will never forget was an April Fool's and the alligator from the zoo.
Oh, my gosh, because it was true. There was an alligator that had gotten away from the zoo, and they couldn't find it. And he came up with this great story about, what was it? It was a Hawthorne or Hayward Elementary School. I think it was Hayward Elementary School.
I think it was
school.
Hayward, yeah.
They were rebuilding it because there was a gas leak or something out there. And they were doing some work out in the area. And his April Fool's joke was they were digging and they found the alligator. You can't believe how many people bought into that.
Well, because you actually presented it as a news story, if
yes,
I remember,
we
right?
Did. Yeah. Yeah.
Did that go against any ethics you had when doing news at that time?
Well, you know what? I was so young and wet behind the ears, I was game to do anything.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, yes, we had the news, but we had fun with it, too.
All right.
Yeah. And it was April Fool's.
Mike Hendrickson, I still see Mike quite often, keep in touch, and a super, super guy.
He is the man responsible for allowing me to grow and be me. I learned radio from Harley, but Mike was the guy who opened the doors on Chad. He's the one who got me to really let go, to really have fun, to really be me.
So, what'd you learn from Dan Christofferson?
Oh, fun. I learned to have fun. I learned to have fun, and that man had the biggest heart of anyone I'd ever worked with. He would never say no to anyone.
True.
Anyone. If somebody wanted you to him to come over at 8 o'clock at night and do a magic show for the kids, he was there at 8 o'clock. Even though he had to get up early the next morning and do a radio show, he had the biggest heart of anyone I've ever worked with.
All right.
Yeah, I think fondly of him.
Yeah. And then Jack?
Oh, Jack. A true friend.
Was that the longest?
Yes.
You had a partner?
Yes, Jack Taylor. The truest friend I had on the air. Mm-hmm. He was the truest friend. We did things outside of work together all the time, and there was just something that clicked between the two of us. And I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it, but he was the closest, truest friend I had on the air.
And was that because Jack did news?
Yeah.
And had you still done news with all the others prior to that and then took over the main slot?
Yep. Yep. Okay. I moved over to the other side of the glass when Jack came down. Okay. Yeah.
And you guys did a lot of crazy stuff together on the air.
Oh, gosh.
What was the most memorable one for you?
The most memorable one was every year at Christmas time. We would always, and this was when Mike and I worked together, we would always have somebody come in from the highway patrol.
Oh.
And we had to, you know, and I think every radio station in the country has
done
it.
Of course.
Where you have somebody come in and they give you drinks while you're on the air. And so people who are listening can pick up on, okay, he's slurring his words.
Right.
And, you know, just to get the point across, don't drink and drive. Well, there were these bottles sitting out there. And at that time, I think it was vodka, if I'm not mistaken. I'm mixing up my own drinks. I didn't know that I was supposed to let them make the drinks. And so I got a little stronger, and a little stronger, and a little stronger. And then this was on a Friday. And at Friday at 9:30 every morning, we used to do what was called the Weekend Report.
Mm-hmm.
And Nonsense was playing down at the Old Town Dinner Theater in Worthing. And it had been going on for quite a long time. And Mike and I are going through the Weekend Report, and we get to Nonsense. And I read it, and Nonsense going on, Old Town Dinner Theater in Worthing. And the next thing I know, out of my mouth comes JC. How God darn long is this show going to go on? And Mike said, all right, good night. And somebody drove me home, and that was the end of it.
Now, did they do the sobriety test part two during that one?
Oh, they knew I was way past.
Right.
Yeah,
I think that now, you know, most of the times you hear that stunt being done, they typically actually, you know, you got to blow in the little tube and so forth so they can measure and tell you. Which always makes me think of the great show WKRP in Cincinnati. Remember how that worked out for Johnny Fever? His reaction time got faster the more he drank.
I do remember that. What a great show.
What was one of your favorite things to do in terms of a remote or a stunt or a promotion?
I always enjoyed doing remotes at Ace Hardware.
Oh, how can you go wrong with the Nybergs?
Because there's so much fun stuff there.
Yeah.
And another one I really enjoyed was Oak Ridge Nursery and Landscaping in Brandon, because I kind of like the garden on the side. You know, I don't do much with my yard, but I like to putz around in it nonetheless. And they always have the neatest things out there for the yard. So I really enjoyed those two.
Yeah. Great places and great people, too.
I'm trying to remember, what year did the two of us work together?
I mean, started in 2000.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
In 2000, I came in.
Kello was just making the switch over to talk.
Yeah.
Slowly, you know, bits and pieces. Rush Limbaugh was on at that time. I got hired to do the long form interviews with the businesses that purchased an hour program.
Okay.
And
so when did Susan come on with you?
Susan came on maybe a year after that.
Okay.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, the Dave and Susan show.
Gosh, you had a great show.
Oh, that was fun. That was a great time. I miss her dearly. John Mogan actually had his Patrick Henry kids make a theme song for us and recorded it down in the studios at Kello.
Neat.
Good times.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I am really, really impressed with what you're doing with this podcast.
Yeah.
Because I spent a lot of time on the road, like I say, and I really look forward to Thursdays.
And I appreciate getting
to listen to your podcast because I think this is what radio is going to become. You are on the cutting edge.
Well, yeah, you know, radio has segmented itself. This is, you know, strictly opinion. I don't have any fact sheet in front of my at this time, but
combined, how many years do we have together? I think we're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. we could maybe say something about it. But I happen to agree because it's growing by leaps and bounds. It's a destination thing. It's also what's neat about it is to watch the numbers. Okay, I had no idea what to expect when I published that first podcast. Mm-hmm. And I go, this is kind of cool. Oh, there's 25. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the day, I think 40-something. By the end of the week, about 56. Then the next week, Bob Wendland from Goodnight Theater Collective was on, and he tagged every person that he mentioned in his interview. And so it got spread around to Facebook quite a bit more. And so that one quickly went to like 45, you know, first couple hours mm-hmm. and so forth. And then I look back and go, oh, look at that. Episode one's now over 75.
Yeah.
And so people that the word spreads because of a guest or, and mm-hmm. so forth will start listening. And then they'll go, oh, you know, they'll read the synopsis of who was on the previous week or the week before that. And go back and start listening to those. So it's a unique setup because you can also do this in your jammies at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I'll bet you have, too.
I have. Well, and then, you know, tonight I've had a beer. You need to have one, Ed, because we're recording it to Woodgrain. And thank you to them for being gracious hosts and allowing us to do that. But, you know, then when I'm in the home studio, well, Jack Daniels is there.
That's what I remember about you. Dave and Jack Daniels.
You got it. Yeah, I enjoy that so much. But this is a pleasure to have you here
talking
about all this.
I really think this is the future of radio right here, what you're doing.
Right. There are so many things that are going on because you can pick up anything you have an idea for. Mm-hmm. You can make a podcast. Anything that you like as a hobby, there's probably one out there you can listen to.
Yeah. And it's completely opposite of where radio is at right now. Because at one time, radio stations were owned independently.
Yeah.
So that's when it was fun.
Yes.
And that's when you and I got to work in it.
You worked hard. You probably were going to be on the air 6 days a week.
Yes.
And on call on the 7th.
But now, with corporate radio, you know, they'll take 500 songs and put them on a station and expect those 500 songs to appeal to all of the listeners out there.
Yeah.
And that's just not, because doesn't work.
They've broken it down that they don't believe in longevity of listeners anymore. They only believe in the 15-minute, in a quarter hour.
I'll be honest with you, Dave. You know, you and I have spent a lot of time in the business.
Oh, yeah.
I'm worried about radio.
I am, too.
I really am, because I don't think they see the tsunami that's headed towards the beach.
And especially for old AMs, like we were accustomed to growing up and working in, getting the feet wet.
My daughter is 26. I don't know if she listened to the radio even when I was on the radio. She doesn't listen to it now. I know that. She doesn't even have a TV in her apartment. Everything's on the computer or on the phone or on the tablet. It's just times have changed, and I'm afraid that if radio doesn't start changing with the times, they're going to get left in the dust.
Remember when the satellite came about, and what did everybody say that was in terrestrial radio? We're going to be more live. We're going to be more local.
Yeah, yeah. No.
That didn't happen.
To be honest with you, if you want to hear some really great conversation, of course, go to a podcast like this, but go to SiriusXM.
True.
Because otherwise you're listening to the same old political jargon on all of the radio stations all across the country. They're playing all the same songs and talking about the same things, and it's just, it's really gotten vanilla.
Very much so. Yeah. So after we worked together at Kello, we were over at another place for a few years, me mostly part-time, and then very shortly for a stint as a full-timer. So over at KSOO, you got to basically have what you wanted by being the Main Street Cafe.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it over
because that was a great show because it was Chad.
Yeah.
And but yet you were still in the format of the all news that people wanted to do, or not people, but that someone would hire you to be in.
Yeah.
What was the best part about that situation for you?
I really enjoyed working with Gene Hedlund. He was a pleasure to work with. And Jake over at Results Radio, the general manager, he never stepped in and said, I don't know if that necessarily works on the radio. He let me do what I wanted to do. I got to do kids jokes for years and years. Didn't really fit in with news talk.
In fact, I believe we were in a meeting one time where you were told that, red flag.
Yeah. And Jake let me do it, and it turned out to be one of the most popular segments during the show.
What do you think is missing now in radio, and why both of us have this feeling that it's not going to survive?
It's just, it's blah. There's no personality. No personality whatsoever anymore. And when we were in radio, that's why we got into radio.
Exactly.
Because we could have some personality. We could have fun. We could interact with the audience. And now it's just this is. And as far as the AM side of it, it's all pretty much just conservative talk, and that's it. With the exception, there are handfuls out there of, like WNAX down in Yankton.
Right.
Big Scott Allen in the morning. He's fun to listen to. He's
good guy, too.
Yeah, he is. And he's doing it right.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of everything down there. And I think that is sorely missed.
One of the things that I wanted to accomplish on this, and maybe it really wasn't even until I started it, that it became like, okay, here's the focus, Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment Conversations. Because one of the things that always bothered me, I got away with a little bit more than you did in your show when we were both at Kello, is I could talk to somebody for 10, 15 minutes. You pretty well had to keep it to about 3 to 5. They're coming in and, so tell us, where can we get tickets? How much is it? Who's the benefit? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And not be able to learn anything more about that group.
Yeah.
Whereas I love talking to the people.
I think you have really found a niche because there is no more life section in the paper.
Right.
Well, some people would say there's no paper anymore either. But
It's gotten less wide.
But there's no more life section in the paper. Radio doesn't handle any of the entertainment stuff anymore. Television doesn't do anything with it. You have really found a niche, I think a real need here in Sioux Falls, because you're right, there's a lot of great entertainment that happens in a town this size.
We are so blessed in the talent that's here, too.
Well, I have learned about a lot of that talent by listening to your podcast, because I did not realize there were so many theater companies in this town.
It's amazing.
It really is.
We're just tipping the scale right now, too.
Wow.
Yeah, there's more to come.
There is so much talent in this town. So I thank you, on behalf of everybody out there who follows entertainment. Thank you for bringing this podcast to us, because where are we going to get the information otherwise?
Well, and of course, when it comes to talent, besides having been a weatherman on TV, many, many years in radio, both as a DJ and news guy, a talk host, still play the accordion.
You want to know something? That's where I work now at Dakota Lions Sight and Health. It's a lot different from radio because everybody kind of stays in their office and does their job. I brought the accordion in.
Oh, my.
And I keep one at the office, and, of course, I have one at home. Mm-hmm. And now whenever anybody has a birthday, I'm gathering everybody together, and we go sing happy birthday to,
good for
to
you.
Them and anniversaries. And it was kind of cool the other day. Susan, who I work with, was having a birthday, and we were all there. And a couple of them go, do you think there's any other place in Sioux Falls that does this fun stuff like this on a birthday?
That's a way to make life grand, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
No doubt.
It is.
All right. So speaking of life, what are you doing outside of work?
I am kind of searching for stuff, right? Something right now. Okay. I love to golf.
Mm-hmm.
I really like to golf, but of course, middle of winter, it's kind of hard to do. We do have now.
That's right. Great shots.
Yeah, great shots. I'm anxious to get out there and try that. Yeah. But I'm kind of searching for something, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
What about hobbies yet besides golf?
That's again. Searching. Putzing in the yard, but again, kind of hard to do this.
That's for sure.
I need to find something.
A winter activity is what you need.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I guess you're right. Yeah, that's what I need. I don't ski anymore. I used to ski.
That's right. Yeah.
But too many people would run screaming, see this big old thing coming down the hill on two skis.
Yeah. Well, I don't golf anymore or ski anymore because of things that have taken place in the body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of tough to do all those.
I did want to share with you, I thought of you today as I was driving back from Fargo because I knew we were going to do this tonight. I was listening to one of your podcasts and you were saying how now at the age that you are, you don't drive over the speed limit.
That's right.
You know what? I don't either.
Yeah.
I always drive.
How different we are, isn't it?
I know it. I know it. I never go over the speed limit. And my wife used to give me a lot of crap about that, but now it's like...
Know.
Yeah. I'm not really in
Don't
any
have
big
to.
Hurry.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll get there when we get there.
Life is what it is. Life is to be enjoyed.
That it is. And it's always an enjoyable time to be with you, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Oh, thank
you. I really
you.
Appreciate the invite. And I tell you, keep up the great work because I think we are witnessing what the future of radio is.
Well,
and it's podcasts like this.
I appreciate the accolades, my friend. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Now let's go have a beer.
Okay, let's
All
do
right,
it.
And we'll be back with more of the Dave Holly Hour in just a moment.
Dr. Perry Langston and Dr. Corey Tootie provide the very best chiropractic care to Sioux Falls. At XL Chiropractic, the focus is to improve your overall health in spirit, body, mind, and will, relieving your pain and helping you in your wellness goals. Discover how to get results the natural way. 605-332-9235 or xlchiros.com. That's EXCELCHIROS.com. XL Chiropractic, excellent care for excellent people.
Welcome back. Once again, here's Dave Holly.
A happy weekend eve. Here it is, a Thursday. Oh, so many things going on once again this weekend in the Sioux Empire community with our great arts and entertainment. But I'm going to talk a little bit about something that took place last weekend because our man, the voice you hear that does all those nice liners that say, welcome back, here's Dave Holly, is here with us tonight.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Zach Dresch. How are you?
I am fantastic. How
Excellent.
About yourself?
If I were any better, I'd be twins.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a line I've used for a long time.
Yeah.
In fact, we'll get into this a little bit, too. Years ago, at a radio station that I worked with, I kind of used it just as a little signature line.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if I were any better, I'd be twins. And, of course, you know, 70-some-year-old ladies write in. That just sounds so bad. You should use something different. Okay, whatever. Anyway,
right.
We're going to stick with it here, though, because this is my damn show.
It's your damn show, and
yes,
it's a great
it
line.
I like
Keep
it, too.
It.
All right.
Yep.
That, and of course, for me, every day is a holiday.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
To get back, now
of
that
course.
We've completely derailed, last weekend, you were Mr. Double Entertainment.
Oh, yes.
You were busy, busy, busy.
Yeah.
You were in Goodnight Theater Collective.
Yes.
With two shows.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Friday night.
Oh,
Saturday night.
Then Sunday
and then
morning.
Sunday brunch. Yeah,
yeah.
Sunday brunch is the one that we got to attend to. And then you finished that up Sunday, and you were the headliner at Bosses.
Yeah, that was a crazy weekend. Very crazy, but I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Well, you did a great job. We didn't get to the performance at Boss's because we're old.
And it's a Sunday. It's a Sunday night.
And we were napping by that time.
I was telling Carrie I would have rather napped myself, actually, some nights. I'm like, you know what? But I was like, tonight, I'm going to bring the thunder.
There we go. Zach needs sleep.
Because I can't sleep without a little thunder.
With a Z. Yeah, I need lots of Z's.
Right. Oh, that could be the next album title.
It could be. You can take it and run with it. Just do that. All right. Now, let's start off first with Goodnight Theater Collective. First of all, I have been so impressed with that group since they started. And by our count, Carrie and I have only missed one show. And I think that's when I was recovering from knee surgery a year ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Otherwise, we hit them. We have been so impressed since the beginning. What's great is to see so many different people that they bring up on stage throughout this.
Yeah.
And this time, it was not just new people that we hadn't seen in some of their productions before, such as yourself, but new people playing multiple parts, too.
Right.
Yeah. What was it like doing, for those that didn't listen to earlier episodes of the Dave Holly Hour, they put on the radio play of the classic It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
As though we were back in the 40s, and we're the studio audience watching you doing the sound effects and moving from mic to mic in the whole works. That had to take a lot of time in the blocking, didn't it?
A lot of, basically, Bob, the director, Bob Wendland, had this idea in his mind. Of having there's five or six of us in the cast. Amy Morrison, the fantastic Amy Morrison, plays the stage manager who organizes the chaos of all of this, playing all the music transitions between scenes. She does sound effects. She does characters herself. So she's the backbone of this whole show. And basically, Bob envisioned three microphones up front for the non-Amy people and then two microphones in back. So if you have one line that you need to chime in with, you can chime in and then sit back down because you don't want to necessarily steal focus from the main priority of the scene. So is this whole back and forth, oh, I'm going to play this character now. Like all of us, for the most part, played about six to seven characters. I think Nick Jackson played more than that. And Kim Scatfold played a little more than that, too. Emily Wilson, who's also an improv, falls with me. She played strictly Mary Hatch. Mary Hatch and then Mary Bailey. Right. And then Hunter Winkelpleck, who I went to high school with. Last time I was in a play with him was 8 years ago. So it's crazy to get back on stage with him and do something. So he played George Bailey, and he did a phenomenal job. And so it's always a challenge. I think it's actually probably more challenging for him to have to play with all the emotions of that character the whole play, because all of us get to change it up every 2 seconds. So it's just like, oh, that's, we're going to this guy. This guy's angry. This guy is a little drunk. This character is a little something else. So it was just a whole different thing to, instead of just focusing on one character.
All right. So how much of it did you have to have memorized, and how much, since it was a radio play, you were doing it, you know, the same way they would have back in the 40s, were you able to read?
Originally, I wasn't supposed to have anything memorized, but Bob suggested that I memorize most of the beginning of the show, as I'm warming the crowd up, because it seems disingenuous if I'm reading.
True.
And he only said do the first two paragraphs, but I decided to overachieve and memorize everyone's introduction, because as a comic, hosting is very important to control the flow of the show.
Right.
And as I was going through, I'm like, this would seem really crappy if I just read this off a script. And so I was just like, I'm going to introduce it. I'm going to memorize all these intros because I want to make sure that people are like, yeah, this cast member's up next and all this stuff. And so I figured a good transition point would to start reading the script to be, we begin the story, so. And so it's like, oh, you're opening the book. Right. It's kind of this, I always envision like a narrator just overact, like just propping it down and being, we begin the story, so and so.
Yeah.
So that I figured that's when I start reading.
All right. So how was the memorization part? I mean, obviously you memorize your bits when you're doing comedy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how was it keeping the things you were going to do later one night in your brain and then still having all this in front of you to do?
I don't know. I've always had a photographic memory. So I just stare at a page until I can get it. I just run the lines. And treat it like a beginning, middle, and end kind of thing with each paragraph. And that's how I've always been. And I always name my bits on stand-up one or two word phrases.
Right.
And I just run run down the list. And like for the gronies, I break those up. For those uninitiated, they're one-liners that are awful, but I love them. Right. And it's basically I list memorize those. So that's a whole other thing. Like I basically get all the bits memorized, and then I break them up. Like, okay, which gronies in order am I doing? What's the best one to start with? What's the best one to close with? And then everything in the middle. So well, I have a weird memory like that. But
you are so lucky. I would love to do theater type things, but yeah. I can't memorize. That's why I've only done in improv.
Right, yeah.
You know, I got to make it up while I go along.
Yeah, that's sometimes it's a challenge. You have to like literally take time, shut everything out of your life, and just sit down and focus on memorization. And that's
when did you guys start rehearsing for this?
We had a table read at Bob's house in August one night.
Wow.
And we didn't meet until November.
Okay.
So it was the first couple of weeks of November is when we started running through everything and blocking.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we went, we just a couple days a week, we'd meet up and run through everything. And then Bob would point out what he wants to have fixed or what he wants to have focused on. And then towards the middle, Bob's like, can you memorize this section? I think that would be nice. And also, I decided to memorize the last part of the show because I say goodbye. And it's kind of weird to be saying goodbye with the script in your face.
Yeah.
So it's like I decided to memorize that, too. So I'm like, that would seem really lazy if I didn't memorize that. So.
All right, so several parts that you played, but the main focus of you was the fact that you were the, as you said, you were the man that starts. You're the actual radio announcer type guy
right.
at the beginning, yeah. not the radio actor.
Right, yeah.
And that had to be fun for you in a couple of different ways because somewhat, you know, similar to what you do, making sure that people are having a good time when you're doing your comedy, especially when you're hosting like an open mic and so forth.
Right.
But by the same token, you've done a little radio.
Right.
Yeah.
So I miss doing radio. I haven't done it in about 4 years, but I used all my experience with that and just kind of. I've channeled that in many different ways. Like I work at Hy-Vee, and so basically they ask me to do intercoms every once in a while,
right.
promoting products. And so I do that. I can do like one or two takes, and I'm done. I basically script it out. Certain things I cannot come up with off the top of my head, so I basically write it down and ask my boss, do you think this sounds good? And he goes, yeah, that works for me. And then basically I just write it down on Evernote, which is a great app, by the way. If you don't take Evernote for comics, anyone that wants to take notes, do Evernote. Nate Holtz got me onto it. And I wrote down the script, went upstairs to the Hy-Vee department head office, recorded it, one or two takes. The first take, I'm usually like, oh, I stumbled on that word. That sucks. Let's do it again. And I just do it a second take. I'm like, bam, we're done.
There you go.
So, yeah.
A great way to do that. Plus, use your talents in so many ways, which means we've got so much to talk about.
Yeah, let's cover it.
So we talked about the good night being on stage in that regard. What was it like for the whole weekend then from going from a Saturday night show, a Sunday afternoon matinee, basically, and then going back and doing what you love to do with your comedy at Bosses and being a headliner, because that was a 50-minute set, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 50 minutes. I could have done probably 20 more because I had about hour 15 of stuff prepared, but I realized, like, oh, I got the light. Crap, I have to cut out a lot of stuff now. So I had to, some of the stuff I reserved for the end, I'm like, oh, I had to say that crappy bit instead of the best bit at the end. But like when you do your first set, there's always some stuff you're like, that's not perfect. Like I've seen Jim Gaffigan, he did bits that he wasn't confident about in front of an arena. So it's like not comparing myself to Gaffigan, but there's moments where you're like, I shouldn't have done that. And then I just made a joke out of it on stage. I'm like, did I really have to put that in the set? Like I made a joke. I'm like, did I have to have the Macho Man KY Jelly bit in here? I did not. And so I just basically said that. And that the audience laughed at that because the joke didn't work. And I'm like, I was so set on the like getting your money's worth for the Macho Man KY Jelly joke. Like, it's not going to work.
What do you consider your style of comedy?
A mixture of all my influences. I love one-liner comedians. Comics that have great stories that are shorter. I appreciate a comic that can tell a great story and keep you laughing the entire way. A mixture of impressions, one-liners, and parodies. So that's like Weird Al is my idol. I love Weird Al parodies. That's where what I grew up with. I love one-liner comedians like Stephen Wright, Dimitri Martin, Mitch Hedberg. All those guys influenced me. And I basically take everything I was influenced by and make it into a 50-minute set because I worshipped Saturday Night Live and Kids in the Hall. So impressions is what I love to do. So I like to... I took huge influence from like Phil Hartman and Daryl Hammond.
Oh, excellent.
Daryl Hammond is a really underrated cast member because he could impersonate someone to a T. And he, I read his book. I don't know if you've read his book, but it's very depressing because
really?
He had a very bad childhood.
Okay.
Abusive parents, all this stuff. But he talked about his experiences backstage at SNL and how he would go through impressions and he would watch videotapes of them and repeat them over and over again until he got the voice down. Like Al Gore, he would just watch on a loop on video and just, I distance myself and all this kind of
tip
stuff.
Or an eye.
Right, yeah. The lock box and all this kind of stuff. And so I just basically like, I impersonate a lot of the people I work with at work too, so it's kind of fun for me.
Do they know that you're doing that?
Some of them.
Okay, good.
And the ones that ask me if I have one for them, I usually lie and say I don't.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like the man that writes a paycheck.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You got to watch out for that part. No doubt about that.
I think I've done my impression in front of him, and he goes, yeah, it's not me.
But just remember, it's the sincerest form of flattery.
Exactly.
Yeah, you tell him that, right? Yeah. Lead up to it with that. That's right. Always a good thing. So what got you started in comedy? What was it the fact that you'd been on stage and doing so many different things?
Improv was my start, actually. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching stand-up and SNL and all this endlessly. I was always a fan, and I'd always toyed with, like, I'd like to perform at some point, but I never knew how or where to go about doing that. And then I went to college. I had done a couple of, I was late to the boat on performing. I didn't do plays till senior year of high school. And so I did a couple of plays. I was kind of the comic relief in the plays, and that I got a big reaction. And I was like, oh, that actually feels really good. I really like this. I was playing the humorous roles that just had a couple lines, then he left the stage. That's my favorite role to play because you're not like the heartbeat of the show. You're not like the heartthrob lead that it has to choose between two women. God, that must suck. I've mentioned that on stage. I'm like, why is that? It's like, be grateful you have two women pining for your affection. Screw yourself.
Like, pining is a great word,
right,
too,
pining.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I love it.
Matt, pineapple's great. I just love being that guy that just says, like, dude, screw yourself, and then walk off stage. That's kind of my, I've always been a fan of that guy. And then freshman year of college, I met Debbie Jones at USF where we went to college together. And she goes, you should really try, just come to improv Monday night. Check it out. See what you think. And I met all these friends, made a bunch of friends. That was my group. And so we did improv every Monday night. We did shows every couple months to the faculty and students. And it was a great time. That sparked me. I started doing plays at USF. And then we went to American College Theater Festival in Lincoln, Nebraska, where it was being held that year. And there was an open mic night, and I was like, I might try stand-up. I think I'm going to try stand-up. And everyone that was with me on the trip's like, yeah, give it, write some material. So I wrote 5 minutes of material that day.
For that night.
And my first crowd was like 300 people. And I wasn't
gracious,
afraid
man.
As much because it was just, like, I've been used to performing in front of 500 people for plays, so it wasn't as scary to me. But it's your own voice,
right.
Your own material. And so at first I stumbled because I was like, oh, what's my first joke? And then I grabbed my phone. I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. And then I had a good set, the rest of the five. And I was like, I'm gonna give this a try. And like a month later, I had just stuck to plays for a while because I didn't have a lot of time. I hit up Nate Holtz, who had been running all the Rookies shows when Rookies was here in town doing stand-up. And so I started going to open mics, got friends with all the comedians there, and that's basically how I got to where I am, or just kept going to every single open mic that I could when I wasn't in plays.
Right.
Because sometimes I'd have to take a break from stand-up because I had to play in school, and so I had to focus on that. But after college especially, that's when I really started grinding and going to every single open mic I could.
What's been the best gig so far for you?
Oh. I could kind of break it up by early stuff. Middle and later. My first favorite show I've ever done, I was doing an open mic at Rookies, and I happened to have a lot of friends in the crowd that were there, and a comic who had been on Howard Stern, Craig Gass, was in the audience, and he had seen my set, and he went up and did a bunch of impressions and stuff and said, I want you to open for me this week, and I'm performing at Wiley's, and I'm like, me? What?
Yeah.
I still have his voicemail from me. I still kept that because that was a first like big moment for me. I'm like, oh, this guy has done a lot. He's friends with all these famous people like Jim Brewer, all these guys. And so I opened for him at Wiley's. The crowd loved me. And that was a first big one that I had. second. Nathan Hoffman, who is now Natalie Hoffman, is now trans, was a comic in town here for a while and headlined at Wacko's back in the day. And he asked me to open for him, and now she. I had just 5 minutes. I just opened with 5 minutes, and that crowd was so laughing at everything. So that was a really good set. And so I felt really good about that. So that was one of those for me. That was a huge win. And lately, yeah, last Sunday was a huge one. So that was a huge highlight for me.
So how many times have you headlined?
Two. First was actually at Woodgrain here,
okay,
where we're doing this podcast. Yeah. 2 years into stand-up, and I did it as a challenge for myself to try and do as long of a set as I possibly could, but I didn't have enough good material yet to think I'd done a great job. I got through it. I did about 40, and it was okay. Didn't feel like I crushed or anything, but it was still a fun experience. I feel like this Sunday was my first true headlining debut kind of thing. So,
excellent.
Yeah, I've done a couple of Christmas parties. I guess that counts as headlining, but in the truest comedy fashion, I call this last Sunday my first true.
We've got a feature act first.
Right. This guy is the last attraction thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, well done. I mean, what a weekend you had.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But that's just, you know, some of the stuff that you have.
Right.
You've talked a little bit about being in Improv Falls.
Yeah.
And when Debbie Jones was on here, we were talking about that, and that she said that when she was going to have improv, she had to have Zach Dresch.
Oh.
Because that's who she started it with in college. And got to know you that way. And we were talking, and I had told you after the performance as well. I thought that your latest performance at Icon, Booze Line Isn't Anywhere, was the best your group has done as a group.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it was just amazing.
I was not in my head that night. I was just having fun. A couple times I stuttered. I'm like, yeah, come on. And then it was just fun. And I actually credit Debbie for giving me the confidence to do all the things that I do. She'd probably be like, oh, come on, that was all you. But no, she got me into improv. She got me starting to do plays. She got me to start. She was a great supporter early on when I was doing stand-up. Like, if it wasn't for her, I don't know where I'd be, straight up. So,
all right, so
she'd probably be like, oh, come on.
stand-up comedian.
Right.
Improv comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Actor. Musician.
Yeah.
How many groups are you in?
And
talk about them. Tell us about everything.
I joined Casey the Sunshine Band on tour every once in a while. They need an auxiliary percussionist. I'm the one that does the finger cymbals on Boogie Shoes.
It's a great part.
It's a great song. Like, yeah. My Baba Boogie Shoes. Sing! that's my favorite. But yeah, I'm in two bands. I was in four for a while, but one of the guitarists of one of our bands moved away, so that was kind of... I think we're going to try and redo it at some point. We're going to see. But one of the bands, our singer couldn't make it work anymore, so that ended. But now I'm in my band that I've been in the longest, which is the Disarmed.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie's husband, Bobby, is the lead singer of that band. So I've been best friends with Debbie and Bobby for a decade now at this point. So we do that, and then Doug Hare is our bassist. We put out two albums so far, one on vinyl, which was a huge feat for us. We wanted it on vinyl. Because I grew up a music lover, always have, but vinyl's been a more recent love for me. Just physically owning a record is great for me, and I love the people at Total Drag, Dan and Liz. They've gotten me into so many cool things. And the second band I'm in is Sharon's Little Helpers. That band came about, my friends Cody and Johnny, who are friends with Natalie, who I've done stand-up with and stuff. They needed a drummer. They'd written some songs, and they're like, hey, we hear you smack the skins. He talks like that. Like, we heard you slap the drums there, man. You want to
slap. And he was aware of this impression of him? So?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I've told it to him, and he goes, yeah, that's pretty good. Like, I've always joked, like, here's what you would sound like at a funeral. Like, sorry about your loss there. Hey, let's get a beer. He's always like, yeah, I guess I sound like that.
Oh.
he always says stuff like, yeah, let's slam a jamma. Let's jam out, man. Like all that kind of, he's very, one of the sweetest guys, one of the nicest guys too. But yeah, we were, they wrote five or six songs and they were great, like gospel country rock songs or, blues rock too, like a mixture of a bunch of stuff. And, everything we immediately clicked, and we've done like six or seven shows and they've all done really well. We've all had a lot of fun. And so that's another band I'm focused on right now. We're performing later this month, so that's going to be a good time. We're opening for Burlap Wolf King and Hooks for Hands. So that's going to be a pretty big show for us. So we're like, oh, those are two big, mega giant Sioux Falls bands. So it's like, hopefully we leave a good impression. And I think we will. We feel good about it. So
confidence has a lot to do with any type of performance, doesn't
Yeah,
it?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you get confidence from?
Friends, family, antidepressants. basically, like,
reminds me, where's my medication?
Yeah. I used to get so nervous. I don't know how I changed my head frame when I go up. Like tonight, I'm excited. I'm not nervous like I used to be. Like when we do our open mics and stuff, I'm not nervous about it. Mainly because I just tell myself, you know what? This is what you love doing. Why are you nervous about it? Like, shouldn't you be excited about it? Shouldn't you be happy that you're doing this?
Yeah.
And so I basically just told myself, just think that way instead of being like, oh, they're going to laugh at me. I'm like, that's the point, you idiot. And so like, I tell myself, you know what? This is what you love doing. Have fun with it. If someone doesn't like it, who cares?
Right.
Like it's comedy subjective. Like everything you do is subjective. Like there's nothing that's like objectively like that's
well, don't you find that even when you use the same stuff from one audience to another,
right?
That, you know, one group, bit A, they might laugh uproariously at.
Yeah.
Bit B, friendly chuckle. Next night, same set.
Yeah.
Bit A. Bit B, uproarious laughter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you do then? Because you said that's a great point, that it's subjective. But when you can tell that one bit went well one night and it doesn't the next, what are your thoughts going through in your head at that point?
I tend to make a remark about how the joke didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually goes better than the actual joke itself. One of my comedian friends, Adam Wilka, who's a fantastic comic, he said, your failure reactions are some of my favorite things you do on stage. It's like, I'll just make a face of in such defeat and then immediately just chime back in with the next joke. Conan O'Brien, even though he's not a stand-up comic, is a huge influence on me on how he did his monologues, especially in the late night days. He would bomb with a news joke and then he would just react like to how the audience reacted and then just do a joke about that, or like because they were like his last Tonight Show episode, because he got canned from Tonight Show pretty quickly. They sprayed gas or like oil on a Picasso painting worth $10 million as a retort, as a rebellious act of violence at the end of before they left Tonight Show. And Conan goes, I just want you all to, like, there he heard people booing, and I'm like, I just want you all to want to point out this is not real.
Yeah.
Like there's someone in there going, he ruined a Picasso. Dear internet. like it's just his reactions. That's how I've gotten influenced and stuff.
So what are your goals in this gig?
I want to keep touring. I want to get myself out there as much as possible. I'd also love to help keep building Sioux Falls as a comedy scene,
right,
as well. And also just keep getting my name out there, not just here but elsewhere. It's because I want to make it a living, because I don't want to keep, as much as I enjoy my job, I don't want to make retail a career.
Right.
You know, no disrespect to people that want to make it a career, but I feel like performance is what I'm called to do.
Yeah.
And Sunday night was a huge catalyst for me to be like, I should really push myself more.
All right. Before we go into, you know, what do you like to do in your spare time and so forth, because you have so much of it.
Yeah, I know. At least 20 minutes a day.
I have to mention this, that, you know, I think we've been going about 25 minutes or so right now. You haven't picked your nose once.
Right. Oh, yes.
The flu bug.
Right.
That's been a
How did we forget that so far?
That has been a great thing for you the past few years. How many years is it now that you have been?
Year four. Three as the official flu bug. The first year we did a campaign where we were symptoms of the flu.
Okay.
Come fighting to see who would be the next flu bug.
Oh, wow.
And so I was fatigue. Debbie Jones was aches. No, not aches. She was the chills.
Okay.
And Micah Abraham, who I've done improv with, he was fever. And Varian Thurman was the aches. And fatigue won the battle. And
so you got the gig.
I got the gig. And funny fact, before we started this podcast, I was talking to Scott Osman, who directed the first couple Flu Bug commercials. Uh-huh. He was hanging out at Woodgrain. So fun fact about right there. So
excellent. All right.
So he always apologizes for that, too. Like, I'm sorry you're the Flu Bug. I'm like, it's gotten me a lot of recognition. I mean,
no doubt about that. And you use it in your act as well. Right. So that's a great trade-off there. All right. So to wrap things up then, when you do have those 20 minutes, what do you like to do to relax or just to have fun?
Sleep.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah. I like to watch old TV shows. I'm not a big new TV show watcher. Okay.
What's your favorite old TV show?
It sounds so cliche, but Friends.
Oh, yeah.
I love Friends.
It's classic.
Funny thing, also, my two biggest influences for stand-up are Matthew Perry's Chandler and Conan O'Brien. Biggest two. I've said that before. And because of how, like, when there's
that would be perfection.
Right. Gum is perfection. Could have said gum would be nice. Could have said gum. I could have a stick, but no. Gum is perfection. A lot of Chandler's lines I still quote all the time. And we're done with the chicken fried rice. Okay, first we're going to need Captains and then Tennille's. That's how I got my sense of humor is from all the crap he said on Friends. Like, straight up.
You could tell it, too.
He didn't write it, probably, but, like, the stuff he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so old TV shows. Well, no matter what has influenced you, we're so thankful here. First of all, just on the show, a personal thank you for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me,
Dave. Personal thank you as well for doing the voice work.
Absolutely.
That we set the show up with. But to also, having become friends with you, so proud of you in everything that you do. And wish you the best of success in whatever way the entertainment field wants to take you.
Thanks, Dave.
But really also appreciate, like you said, one of the things you want to do is work on building up the comedy scene here in the Sioux Empire. And we're thankful as that as an arts and entertainment community.
Oh, thank you. You're one of my favorite people in the world, so thank you for having me
likewise.
On the podcast. So,
yeah,
love you, man.
It. Love you, too. Appreciate it, brother. All right, we have more to come in just a moment.
Ho, ho, ho! The year's going quickly, the elves are busy, and the missus still makes the best cocoa. She's also been tending to some mending as my suit had a slight tear from the latest reindeer games. As for me, I've been tending to the herd and planning my yearly trip. You know I check things twice. Oh, don't worry, you're good. So I will stop, but if you'd like me to make an extra special trip, leave a message on my hotline at 888-271-4925.
From the Dipsy Doodle Studios at the world headquarters of Big D Entertainment, a 40-square-foot home studio in the middle of America, it's Dave Holly.
Well, thank you once again to Chad Hoeler McKenzie and Zach Dresch, my guest this week, as well as Woodgrain Brewery for a place to have a nice beer and a good conversation. Thanks to all of you for listening, no matter where, when, how you listen, certainly appreciate it. I'm heading to Monk's tonight for Basement Dwellers Improv Comedy. It's a pretty full weekend. Full Circle Book Co-op tomorrow night for a play produced by Monstrous Little Theater. Saturday night to Red Rock in Rowena for Crazy Frank Karaoke. And then Sunday, I'll be in Worthing for Old Town Dinner Theater's Oops, Wrong Chimney. That's going to be to celebrate my Variety of Life birthday, number 57. Expecting a lot of Heinz steak sauce. Get out and take in the arts and entertainment. Make it part of your wonderful life this holiday season. Thanks again. I'm Dave Holly. And for me, every day's a holiday.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions, and is produced by Big D Entertainment.